All right. So, good morning and hello. You're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9. I'm sorry. This is our first live show. You're going to have to give us some leeway. We are broadcasting from the unceded ancestral lands of the Musqueam people here at UBC. And yeah, my name's Samantha. I'm Métis from Northern BC. My family comes from Isle of Cross in Saskatchewan. And I am hosting today with Lindsay, who will introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Lindsay. I'm a queer trans two-spirit person from Treaty 8 territory. I'm Cree Métis.
All right. So today we're going to be talking about queer and trans two-spirit Indigenous identities and the decolonization of gender and gender roles in our nation. So we have a pretty big episode today. It's going to be pretty heavy, but really interesting and super important. Is there anything you'd like to say about it, Lindsay, before we go into the big intro? No?
I'm good.
Go ahead. All right. So gender in our communities has been colonized, essentially. So basically, we have been living in a dichotomy that's been brought in by kind of white settler heteropatriarchal ideas of what and how we live and live in our bodies. So trans and two-spirit identity is inherent to our nations. It's not anything new, and it's always been there, but it's been hidden, and it's been basically smashed down quite violently, for being honest.
Two-spirit identity, I think, has been, like, through a transition of being an understanding of sexuality solely based in queerness, like gay and lesbian experiences, and then further has included trans experiences. I don't think that we intend necessarily to identify two-spirit identity because it's such an individual experience and it's an umbrella term that welcomes anyone. So we're going to be talking about how two-spirit identity is representative of an individual's experience of their gender or their personal relationship to femininity and masculinity. My understanding of two-spirit identity for myself is that it encompasses my gender expression based, like, not only within a binary, like there are trans men and trans women, but also agender, bigender, non-binary, and any amalgamation under a gender representation to an individual.
Mm-hmm. And I think for the most part, we're going to be trying to decenter stories of queerness and transness and two-spiritness, not on violence and trauma, whereas a lot of the stories you hear, a lot of the conversations are centered on violence and trauma. And that really works to kind of delegitimize and just make existence difficult, when really we should be talking about radical two-spirit and trans love and celebrations of that. But it's also really important to understand that there is violence against trans bodies that we need to be acknowledged in our communities and in our nations, and that especially violence against trans femme Indigenous folks is.
Mm-hmm. Throughout the radio show, we might make mention of trans femme and trans mask experience. It's because a colonial understanding of gender is based on an assigned gender at birth, entirely representative of genitalia, and that doesn't leave any autonomy or agency for an individual to identify who they are and what value they place upon themselves within community and what community should value within them.
For sure. And so before we really kick into it, we're going to play you a song. So we're going to be playing Somnium by Morning Coo. Morning Coo is the beautiful musical genius of Blackfoot artist Chandra Melting Tallow from Siksika First Nation.
Thank you.
All right, so you just heard Somnium by Morning Coo. Morning Coo is the musical genius of Chandra Melting Tallow. So you're tuned into Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM, and we are talking about Two-Spirit, Trans, and Queer Indigenous Identities today. So I'm Samantha, and I'm here with Lindsay. And so to continue our conversation of where we left off in our intro, talking about gender in our nations and in our communities, and the colonization of that and how Two-Spirit and trans identities are inherent in our communities and they're nothing new, and how these stories don't necessarily have to be centered on violence and trauma, but it's important to recognize that that's the existence, that that can be the existence and that can be the story, especially for Indigenous trans femme folks. And so we're going to pick up now talking about body sovereignty, I believe, unless Lindsay has anything to add to that.
Yeah, I think that we just wanted to go back and really acknowledge that not only is Two-Spirit like an umbrella term and we might all identify with it, there is a lot of discrepancy in our experiences of it and our experiences of violence and exclusionary practices. So trans femme and trans women within the Two-Spirit community, rather, experience a lot of more systemic exclusion, social exclusions, outright violence. And I think it's so important to acknowledge that and that my experience is not going to pertain to that. And we need to talk about how we can work in solidarity with our trans femme community members and look really deeply into how we are honoring them and placing value on them within community and really reconsider if we are actually upholding all of our relations within community.
Yeah, and it's really tied to this idea of body sovereignty. But body sovereignty in terms of feminist discourse isn't anything new. So it just means that we as folks have control and sovereignty over our own bodies. So we are able to say what we want to happen to our bodies. We have consent over our bodies. And that also is not just physically our bodies. That means our identity and who we are spiritually and physically. So in terms of Two-Spirit and trans body sovereignty, that hasn't really happened for all trans folks and especially Indigenous Two-Spirit trans folks. And so when we're talking about our decolonial praxis, and what it means in our academia, in our lives, when we talk about Two-Spirit and trans folks, especially Indigenous folks, body sovereignty is huge, and it's not something we talk about.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it's really important to acknowledge the imperative nature of talking about body sovereignty within a decolonial praxis, but to also focus further beyond like an academic space and a really privileged and accessible space, because Two-Spirit and trans folks are so often excluded or re-traumatized, or our identities are erased, and to actually unpack and interrogate the fact that a lot of our conversations about Two-Spirit identities and queer politics and queering indigeneity, becomes based within a critique of identity politics as something that's based on an individual preference, as opposed to actually reifying the power of ourselves and our sovereignty and what that means for our communities, our nationhood, and our experiences within our relations to land.
Yeah. Is there anything you want to say? We just tried to cut ourselves off.
No, you can go first.
And when we're talking about our land, I think in terms of what I have heard and what have I experienced when we're talking about Indigenous feminisms, is that land is tied to women's bodies, which isn't necessarily untrue, but it's also this idea of a very like cis-normative Indigenous woman's body, where when we are looking at decolonizing gender and remembering what gender means to our communities inherently, our bodies are of the land, and that also means trans and Two-Spirit bodies, which are very much left out of that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's we really need to focus on recentering Indigenous understandings of gender and individuality, rather, and really focus on individual differences and values within communities. So what that would mean is someone having the sovereignty to define who they wish to be for community and what they want to give to community and what they want to gather for community. So if we really interrogate the ways that colonization has based our understandings of relationships based on like heteronormative understandings, like a man and a woman getting married, having a baby, and we're still assuming genders, not only like disrespecting pronouns, which is extremely important, but like to look into yourselves and consider what this person is presenting to you beyond your colonized perspective. So if someone's asking you for they them pronouns, if someone's asking you for any number of pronouns, what that means for them, you're not just abiding by a grammatical error or like just giving them what they need, but to really look at the way that you view them and if you're honoring them and respecting who they are as individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I think it's really easy when you have been so indoctrinated and so just brought up in a world where there's just two genders constantly given to you and heteronormativity is constantly given to you, and to when somebody's asking for certain pronouns or asking for you to look at them as who they are, if you're not working to actually actively do that, then you need to really ask yourself some big questions.
Mm-hmm. And further, I think that we need to acknowledge the decolonial potential of queering our praxis and centering Two-Spirit and trans folks within our movement. Our basis of understanding of decolonial relations and decolonial love is so inherent in our understandings of gender and relationships and how we navigate community through that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in terms of decolonial love, when we're talking about decolonial love not only being romantic love, but the love for our land and love for our nations, that means everybody in our nations, and that means regardless of people being uncomfortable or people not understanding, that really huge part of decolonial love. And I think for me as an ally, even though I have really complex feelings about the word ally, is important, because when I'm talking about decolonial love and I'm talking about loving my nation, it means like I'm loving even the parts of my nation I don't necessarily understand or relate to, but it's still there and it's still important, and we need to really begin unpacking that and realizing what that means. Mm-hmm. Over to you, Lindsay.
Yeah, I think beyond that, really refocusing our energies within an Indigenous feminist framework to reconsider whose voices are being prioritized and what that means for our communities. We have a lot more happening within the academic and activist realm of people speaking about queer and trans Indigenous peoples and talking about how important that is, but oftentimes we're just an empty signifier or one sentence before, like, going back to talking about normative relationships or empty acknowledgments that we need to do better without actually putting that into practice and trying to understand what that means for each of us. And I think a lot of that just ties into individual discomfort with our own privileges. And if we're going to be asking for people to respect our movements, we need to look within our communities and respect our community members as well.
Mm-hmm. I think it ties into this bigger conversation of taking and making space for queer, trans, and two-spirit Indigenous folks. And I think for a large part in community organization, in movements, and in the academy, that doesn't happen at all. And if it happens, mm-hmm. it's very rare and often uncomfortably wrong.
It's a lot of people speaking for us or about us. And I think that most people are aware that we don't want, like, non-natives talking about us. There's a lot of misinformation being passed around and prioritization for academics who don't identify as queer and don't identify as trans or two-spirit. And that also ties into a colonial framework of what we prioritize as intellectual or valuable or rigorous. It's oftentimes an academic voice, a voice that's making money doing this, a voice that's based within research and interest as opposed to lived experiences. And I think we need to understand that the personal is political and actually just readjust our framework rather to make space for those people, understand that someone does not have to use an academic vocabulary, does not have to use critical theory or philosophers to substantiate their claims of experiences.
Mm-hmm. And it's really just talking back to, like, what you're saying, considering whose voice is being given space. So even in, as you were saying, like, we have, like, cisgendered folks and are, like, non-queer folks talking about, like, trans politics or queer politics, still, is that making space or is that still taking away space? Mm-hmm. And I think in the academy and community organization, that's a huge conversation that's still happening. Because even though you think you're being great, you're still taking away space.
Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that you shouldn't be talking about it, but it should be really, you know, stepping back and creating spaces for other people to talk and reconsidering the fact that, like, when two-spirit people are invited to speak, there's one. And it's, like, a very privileged voice, my voice included, as someone who's transmasculine and can pass through the world without much violence being done to my body because of my gender, and actually bringing in the people who maybe, like, aren't being valued within community and aren't being published within, like, queer Indigenous theory texts.
I think as just a bit of a side note, if you're confused about any of the topics, any of the vocabulary, look it up. Like, just take the time to Google it instead of, like, trying to shake it out as somebody who's probably really sick about talking about it. Like, you're two-spirit friend probably is really sick of just having to explain these conversations over and over and over again. Just Google it, look it up. There's resources out there. They're not that hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
Just take the time. And I think taking that time is also a huge sign of respect and making that space, because when you have folks who aren't sitting there explaining the basics, you're opening up space for them to actually be able to dive into conversations they want to have.
Mm-hmm.
That was my side note.
Yeah, it's a good side note. Yeah. And as we were talking about before, like, decolonial love, that's so imperative to our movements, our political movements, our resurgence movements, and the ways that we interact with each other and unlearn traumatic and violent communication practices. And I personally don't believe that we can do that without centering queer folks, without centering trans folks, and really decolonizing the way that we love and uphold them within our relations and within our communities.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, in our nations, we should be wanting everybody to live a good life. We should be wanting all our relations to be able to live a life that's not full of trauma and violence, and that they're being supported to the fullness that everybody else has been supported.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of work, and I think people don't want to do that work, but it's work that needs to be done, and people need to just do it and start understanding. Would you like to go to another song?
Yeah, we could.
Yeah, so before we move on to our next little portion of our chit-chat, we're going to move on to a next song. Would you like to set it up, Lindsay? It's Downtown Boys.
Oh, we're going to be playing Monstro by Downtown Boys.
Where is Downtown Boys from? I think they're from Providence. Providence, yeah. Rhode
they
Island.
They are from Rhode Island, Providence. Yeah. They are a hardcore band, a hardcore political punk band, rather, that is based in POC and political ideology. They create spaces for youth and talk often about recentering racialized voices and taking back space.
All right, so here we go. Here is Monstro by Downtown Boys. Hello and welcome back to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting to you from the unceded ancestral territories of the Musqueam people. And so back to our conversation about queer, trans, and two-spirit identities in Indigenous nations. We're going to be talking about now in our next portion about praxis and living the good life. And so what does that mean, Lindsay?
What does living the good life mean? No, in terms of praxis, I think I just wanted to go back and talk a little bit more about what it means to take space and make space for queer voices within conversation. I mean, I don't like to center on academic endeavors, but I will for just a minute. in understanding that, I think you really need to take a look at the responsibility that you're being given when you're speaking for and of people, because so often academics and activists and researchers are basing their interests on like a personal politic. They're speaking for queer people, they're speaking for trans people, but at what cost? And are you furthering, like, are you doing anything for our communities, or are you just furthering your research interest or creating an empty signifier with two-spirit, trans, and queer bodies based within a personal interest in extending your political ideology, and with that, your social capital and your respect within community? I mean, within community events, oftentimes we hear people talk about, like, the incessant nature of, or rather the inherent need to center discussions on queer people and trans people, and you see them talking to a room full of people who don't have that experience, and how are you being how are you holding yourself accountable by doing so? If you're sitting in a room talking to an entire group of heterosexual people or cisgender people and explaining your perspective on queer and trans issues, then what is the purpose for you? Are you making reach out to community? Are you inviting them? Are you inviting them to give you critique, feedback? Are you actually doing the research and centering their voices? Are you reading about those experiences within like critical theory, or talking about it within an academic sense? These are real lived experiences, and that needs to be prioritized.
For sure. And if we're still talking about the academy.
That's awful.
Yeah. Back to this institution that doesn't have a lot to say about anything. I'm joking. Not joking. Our praxis that we use when we are doing our work, and I think all of us as students in this room right now who have come from Indigenous studies or in Indigenous studies or working through Indigenous studies, we are not really, I'm trying to think of a nice way to say this. We're not really led into any conversations that are led by queer Indigenous folks or two-spirit Indigenous folks. And that, I found in my studies, was a huge hole. Mm-hmm. It was, I mean, we talked about so many important things and so many wonderful things, but this is something that we left out. And when you leave things out, when it's an omission, it's an act of violence. Even though it may not be on purpose, it's still an act of violence to leave people out of the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think when we're talking about our praxis, we need to really acknowledge that, mm-hmm. and be accountable to our relations.
Mm-hmm. And like, not only is it a violent experience, it's an experience that completely erases the violent nature of navigating the world as a two-spirit or queer person who's also dealing with settler colonial violence, gendered violence, class violence. It's just, it's entirely a mishap, or rather a misstep, for people who don't have that experience to leave others out of the conversation. And I think that we need to go back again and think about the radical potential of centering queer and trans Indigenous relations within our praxis.
Mm-hmm. And when you're centering, like we were talking about before, not speaking for, not taking space away from, but working in your praxis to be able to create space. And if that means learning for yourself, finding speakers, finding folks that who would want to talk to you, mm-hmm. and doing things like that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just giving up your control, giving up your security. If you want to make space for someone, they're going to come in. You're not going to be in control of that. That's fine. You don't get to, like, frame everything. And I think it's just really strange to see the ways that people are mobilizing queer and trans identities right now, and it's based within a personal politic, when you're not actually reaching out to these relations in your life. Are you making space for them? Are you supporting them when they have experiences of violence or struggles? Are you reaching out to them and making sure that they feel valued and honored within your personal relationship? Or are you just sharing articles when there's violent acts? Are you just mentioning us when you're talking about heteronormativity and how you're disrupting that with one sentence.
Yeah. And it all just goes back to the actual work people need to do. And I think when we talk about work and we talk about praxis, it can be very much up in the air in these concepts that we don't bring into our lives that we can actually grasp onto. And work is work, and work is hard. And you have to push yourself, and you have to really, really examine yourself and, like, look in yourself when you're trying to bring people, or not bring people in, that's the wrong thing to say, when you're trying to make space for people. And when you're making space for people, it's making sure that they're loved and they're safe and that you're accountable to them, especially when they're oppressed and there's layers of privilege in their experiences.
Mm-hmm. And I think that draws into moving beyond the academy and talking about our resurgence work. A lot of our decolonial praxis is based on returning to traditional ways of being and ways of knowing and cultural practices. And oftentimes, because of our colonized perceptions of gender and identity, Two-Spirit people are left in the dust, so to speak, so that when we reach out to try and celebrate and live the good life and decolonize ourselves, there's no space left for us. There's not really any kind of ways that we can participate because of the gatekeeping of cultural practices and how that's been internalized in such a gender binary and something that's extremely based in, like, other people's perceptions of your gender and what your body means to them as opposed to what your body means to you.
Mm-hmm. And we do talk a lot about what it means for us, especially as displaced urban Indigenous folks, what it means to return home. And I think it's a very privileged conversation we have in community and in the academy, mm-hmm. about when we're talking about returning home and whose bodies can return home and who can return home and who can return home safely. Because as much as we want to talk about home, and I think we really tend to romanticize what home means for a lot of Indigenous folks, there's some folks where returning home is hard and it's difficult and it can be traumatic and violent.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're talking about that and we're prioritizing who actually gets to go home safely, that's mm-hmm. huge.
And in what way they can return home.
Mm-hmm. And what it means for our traditions. Because there's also a lot of conversation about what it means for Indigenous folks to pick up our traditions, to talk back to our ancestors and learn those ways. But there's a lot of gatekeeping when it comes to who can access these traditions and what that tradition means for them. And tradition can be unsafe. And when our traditions are unsafe for us as Indigenous folks, that's not okay. That's not letting people live a good life. That's mm-hmm. not decolonial love.
Mm-hmm. And I think while it's important to talk about this, I really just want to acknowledge that a lot of these traditions have been lost, and it can be really hard to reconnect with your nation's understandings of gender, and that's entirely valid. But there are Two-Spirit elders within urban community. There's Two-Spirit elders who have been displaced by their communities, have been, like, run out. But there are elders that we can turn to and speak to about this, and there are, in my experience, more elders open to talking about Two-Spirit identities and what that means for them.
For sure, for sure. And when it talks about our traditions, I mean, traditions are fluid, and I know people don't want to talk about it when we talk about our traditions because they have been attacked and they have been taken away. People like to try and keep our traditions as static things, as things that can't change, when really traditions are dynamic and they're fluid and they change as we change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to talk about the ways that we welcome Two-Spirit community members to participate in our sacred ways of being, and to extend our welcoming to opening our perceptions and our communities to furthering cultural practices and gender roles and traditions and knowledges from a Two-Spirit perspective. We might have lost a lot of this knowledge, but there are Two-Spirit people doing amazing work and have been doing amazing work. We're still here and we're still decolonizing ourselves and learning what that means for our community and ourselves as individuals. But we need to be given the space to grow as a community of queer and trans folks, and to not only just be pigeonholed into our queer and trans bubble, but to be able to leap out into community and share what we have and celebrate with others within community. It's so important to build those relationships.
For sure. And I think when we're talking about community and the inclusion of queer and trans people, we need to move past the conversation of what inclusion really means. Because I think when you say we include somebody, it seems like there's already this entity that exists and you're kind of just like carving a hole and putting that people there, kind of like a puzzle piece. Mm-hmm. When in reality, inclusion, especially in terms of our communities, is actually more than that. It's not necessarily bringing something in that wasn't there before. Mm-hmm. It's already realizing that that thing has already been there this entire time.
Yeah.
And making that space.
Mm-hmm. It really comes down to challenging yourself in the naturalized perspective of a colonial perception of gender and sexuality and love and intimacy and even like child rearing and childbirth as something that was forced upon us, and that our traditions were we were displaced from our traditions and our lands, and that we just have to challenge that within ourselves and challenge that within our relations as well, for those of us who have people who don't necessarily understand what that means. We really need to view this as something that's been forced upon us, and we need to work on getting through in order to decolonize and further our praxis as peoples.
For sure. And I think it's just really working. That's all I can say. I think, what did Leanne Simpson say? There's no such thing as a free lunch. You just have to work. Nothing in colonization. When you're decolonizing, nothing comes easy.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're queer, especially if you're two-spirit, especially if you're trans. That really doesn't come easy. And it makes it harder when your relations aren't making the time or doing that work too. Because nobody who's decolonization, nobody who has been oppressed should have to do work alone. That's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of why we're all together. And why we have these beautiful communities and nations is that we don't need to do this work alone. And I think that's really important. And we're going to go to a song. I just got a look that says we're going to a song now. So the next song I'm going to be playing is For Liz by the Disco Tays. The Disco Tays are a Navajo band from New Mexico. We'll be right back. All right, so that was the Disco Tays with Four Liz, like I said earlier. The Disco Tays are Navajo from New Mexico, and you're listening to Unceded Airwaves on 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory. And so we're just going to do a little bit of a wrap-up on the topic we've been talking about thus far, which has been queer, trans, and two-spirit Indigenous identities. A lot of what we've been talking about today has been centering these stories, centering the stories of Two-Spirit and trans-Indigenous folks, not only in the academy, really moving away from the academy in that privileged space, but also in our communities, both chosen and our traditional communities, and what that means and the work that has to be done. And I think a lot of what we are saying is not talking for people, but instead making space for trans and Two-Spirit folks to speak. And also when we do that, when we invite folks to do this, or when we have that space being created, making sure that people are loved and people are supported and that people understand that we need to actively work to make this happen, that it's not going to come easy, it's not going to come out of thin air, that this is actual hard work we have to do. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, Lindsay? I just think that in rounding up, talking about the amplification of voices as opposed to speaking over people is really important, as you were mentioning. But also to turn into ourselves and examine the ways that we've internalized colonialism and how we continue to perpetuate violence against one another. There also needs to be a conversation within Two-Spirit communities of our differential experiences, how some of us can pass through spaces relatively safely while others experience violence after violence after violence, and really turning within community to ask what we can do to support and honoring that kind of support. Honoring all of our relations as opposed to just the ones that are easy for us and what's comfortable to us.
Yeah, and it's about when we're in community, when we're in our nations, supporting everybody to live the good life. Mm-hmm. Supporting everybody and loving everybody, even the people who we don't understand, or, you know, who, I don't even know how to phrase
straight
this.
Straight people.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
No, you're not. It's really, it's learning to love and loving without question is what it is. It's just being able to make sure that everybody gets to live the good life equally. And that can mean taking a step back for you, mm-hmm. and supporting and holding up other people.
Right. And also understanding that living the good life might mean something entirely different. That some of us can't go back to community, that some of us can't go back to our families, but living the good life for us is making community within our chosen families, within our chosen spaces, and building relations built on respect and love, and especially decolonial implications of relationship building, and that shouldn't be devalued, and our expressions of culture and tradition and our ways of being are still valuable regardless of our standing within potentially very violent or very exclusionary situations.
Mm-hmm. And that also means educating yourself and taking the time to really do that, expand your knowledge so you can understand. Like, it's a really simple thing. It just seems like so basic to be like, educate yourself, but actually educate yourself.
Yeah, and an acknowledgement that, you know, going back and reading articles or reading about like queerness and trans identity, while it's good, you still have internalized heteronormativity and gender roles so deeply that you're going to mess up, and you need to be accountable for those mistakes and not wash over them, and continue to build stronger relations with our Two-Spirit communities, and respect us when we're angry with you because you've erased our identities, or you've excluded us from something, or you've painted our bodies as something that we're not comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. And really, when that anger is happening, it's not... Anger is, it's rooted in love. And when you make someone angry, it's because, you know, someone loves themselves enough to know that they've been hurt, and that's violent. Mm-hmm. And when someone's calling you out, someone's taking you for a good drag, you just listen to them, because that's where you learn, and that's how you're accountable. Mm-hmm. And accountability is paramount in community relationship building.
Mm-hmm. And it's essential in our community building and our nation building as well.
For sure. And we also need to be really conscientious of gatekeeping our traditions and letting our traditions be fluid and letting our traditions not include trans and two-spirit folks, but really looking at those traditions and understanding that those traditions have always been for trans and two-spirit folks, mm-hmm. and that we need to really examine that, because there's a lot of folks out there who like to keep it cis.
Yeah, which is entirely true. But also, really reconsidering, I find that a lot of invitations into cultural practice and experience and knowledge is solely based on a cis perspective, a cis sexist perspective, rather, of what my body represents, for example, or what other trans bodies represent, and an assumption that I'm going to view my body in the same way that others will who identify as cis or non-trans people, and thinking that that's enough space to be given, when that's actually a really violent experience and extremely exclusionary, and we see a lot of youth being disconnected because of that or withdrawing from cultural practices and, you know, really searching for a community without one who's going to make space for them.
For sure. For sure. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Anything that you feel we left out? Any sidebars you'd like to talk about?
I mean, I feel like I could talk for another 2 hours, but I just think that we should definitely make an invitation for trans femme folks to come in and talk about two-spirit identity and their experiences, because I can only talk about someone who stands in solidarity with that. But really looking at the ways our voices are being amplified and what we can do to support everyone within two-spirit community and queer community.
For sure. I think with that, we're going to wrap up the conversation and move into some news. Yeah?
Cool.
Not? Yeah. News. And so we have about 8-ish minutes left to talk about an interesting time that's happening in Oregon right now with the standoff at the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. So over the weekend, Amon Bundy, the son of Cliven Bundy, a Nevada rancher and his armed supporters, broke off from a peaceful rally in Burns, Oregon, and stormed the headquarters of this National Wildlife Refuge in the support of two ranchers convicted of committing arson on public lands. So Clive Bundy is this, like, wild.
Yeah, trigger warning white supremacy.
Actually, like, a horrific white supremacy. Like, there's, like... like, we're giggling, but it's, like, uncomfortable giggling because he's so ridiculously horrible.
Yeah.
And so now we have a news story about these people who have taken over a wildlife refuge being called militiamen, which is interesting.
Yeah, militiamen making a peaceful protest.
With guns. Well,
for their occupying sacred native land.
Yeah, it's Paiute territory?
Yeah, Northern Paiute territory.
Northern Paiute territory. I mean, like, I feel like the conversation's blazingly obvious to us about how just, like, fucked up this is.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know how to approach it. It's the whitewashing of, well, not even the whitewashing. Maybe the innocent wash of whiteness that can frame them as militiamen while being armed and occupying territory that was never theirs to begin with. And the way that privilege coincides with the fact that anyone else, even walking down the street in actual peaceful protest, is framed as someone who is a threat and violent. And the fact that whiteness...
Yeah. It's that...
I can't say it.
It's a really interesting conversation because we have these... men, white men, who have violently taken over. I mean, they say peaceful, but, like, let's be honest here.
Yeah.
Who have been violent in the past and have taken over this place, being called militiamen, blah, 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 when Indigenous folks and brown folks can protest and they get put on a terrorist watch list. Like, like Muslim folks, like, can protest and they're put on a terrorist watch list. Like, I mean, this is not calling this for what it is. It's still skirting around when white people grab guns.
Right. I think you can only be considered a terrorist by dominant society when you might be making a threat to dominant society and dominant powers. True. Colonial empire.
That was like the colonial empire in like 10 words or less. Like, you really just dropped the mic. They're screwed to the wall, but they're dropped. So I think we are wrapping up here. Thank you for listening to us today on Unceded Airwaves. Right. Thank you from Sam.
Maybe, oh yeah, thank you for letting me talk about stuff. Maybe we will come back again to talk about Two-Spirit trans identities, and it won't be a singular conversation.
We're going to cut into another song here. We are going to listen to Wave of History by Downtown Boys.
Yeah, it's perfect.
All right. Hello, thank you for listening again. This has been Unceded Airwaves on 101.9 CITR FM. Next up, we have Synchronicity. Thank you.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
Treasons Radio, this is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM.
Yes, yes, you are now rocking with the best, 101.9 CITR Radio. Crimes and Treasons, this is your boy Just Blaze. Right now you're rocking with Jules Andre Brown, Rolly Rails, Jamal Steels, and Horsepower. You know what it is, right?
Yo, it's Iron Sue, man. I want to shout out Crimes and Treasons Radio, man. CITR 101.9, man. Turn up, turn up, turn up, turn up.